Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to the Irish Farmers Journal podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's Thursday, the 14th of October. I'm Stephen Robb, and you're very welcome along to the Irish Farmers Journal tillage podcast. As always, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleagues, Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh. It's been a busy week in Ireland's tillage fields, largely helped by pleasantly mild and dry autumnal weather for the most part. And looking across our Sencrop network of weather stations, it's clear to see that it has been a good week weather-wise. There has been splashes of rainfall in the past 7 days in many areas, but amounts are low, much less than 10 millimetres, and temperatures are easily in the mid-teens. So all in all, quite good for getting field work done. So, as always, we're going to start this podcast by taking a run around the room to see what's been happening in Ireland's tillage fields in my colleagues' respective areas this week. So, Andy, going to kick off with yourself. What have you been seeing out and about?
Lots of planting everywhere. I think that people have an intention of planting winter grain. Something is happening in fields now. Lots of fields recently planted, lots of work going on, and an amount of crops already up and seemingly doing quite well. So good progress. Haven't seen anybody doing any harvesting of any other crops, potatoes or beet. That's not saying that they're not going on, certainly potatoes, but just I haven't seen it in my travels.
Over to yourself, Siobhan, what have you been seeing?
Yeah, similar to Andy, plenty of work, plenty of sowing, plenty of crops up. And, you know, still there seems to be a lot of crops going in. So it'll be good if the winter area holds. I think people were quite happy with winter crops this year and did quite well out of them. I was on the road a bit this week and, you know, the same up around Dublin. I was in Loud and I met, I'd say, about three different outfits doing maize. So it's great to get such good weather and see so much work being done in such good conditions, leaving soil in good order.
Yeah, certainly. It's been a big week, even on the potato harvest in front. Most guys are at it to some degree this week. Just look, the ground conditions are good. So and crops are ready. Let's be honest. So it's coming together quite nicely on the northern front. Yeah, plenty of field work going on as well. Anyone who hasn't got their crops in at this stage are making a go at it this week, and ground ploughing up quite well. Albeit there has been a little bit more rain at the northern front than the rest of the country. So I suppose to kick off formally into the podcast this week, Andy, I'm going to come to yourself first. You tuned in to the AHDB Markets webinar, which was held this week. What came from the webinar?
Stephen, some things may be semi-predictable, some things may be a small bit of a surprise based on the current thinking in markets. Summarising them very quickly, wheat would be seen as being potentially strong going into next year and maybe even into next harvest. Barley perceived as probably even stronger than wheat as things unfold, but there's certainly a little bit of cold water put on the prospects for maize in terms of price, mainly coming from the probability or possibility of higher global output, with South America being the major driver of the extra production if it happens. But also, I think, concerns as to what the overall demand will be in China in terms of imports, that there was suggestions that that might be slowing down and that might take some of the heat out of the market. But look at all of these things. They were on a seesaw. They were also suggesting that, you know, we could see increased biofuel production over the next 12 months, just depending on the way political decisions are made and demand, overall demand returns based on higher inherent fuel costs, higher carbon tax in part of the world, and just general overall usage of what's going to happen there. So they were the kind of main things that were in it.
And to just go back to China for a second, because arguably China has been one of the significant drivers of the uplift in grain markets over the past 12 months or so. The indications are that that is slowing down.
Yes, indeed. And slowing probably a bit on both maize and soya imports. The suggestion was that the pig herd is not where people thought it was going to be. China, of course, had a good harvest of its own this year, which is removing kind of some of the temporary demand that was there in the past because they had bad years. But it's always a bit difficult to know exactly what's happening in China. But the expectation was that the combination of the pig herd in particular and the internal economic dynamics of the country would suggest the marketeers to indicate that we couldn't depend on demand from there being as high in the next 12 months as it has been in the last 12.
Okay, let's turn to oilseed rape briefly. There's been a bit of a dip in the markets this week.
Yes, rape had been going, you know, exceptionally strong. While we might say that grain prices were high, rape prices have been on fire, and there's no other phrase to describe them, for about the past 6 months odd, arguably. And they certainly took a bit of a tumble in the first 2 days of the week, maybe 30 to 40 euro a ton coming off the futures prices. But they're picking up a bit again at midweek. So look, was it a temporary dip due to selling? I don't know. There would be a feeling that rape will remain scarce going forward for the markets that have to have rape. But the question is, will people swap over and try to use other oils? The major uncertainty in the rape market is the Australian harvest. Australian farmers are very commercial, as they should be. And they obviously followed the high rape prices by planting more acres to meet the potential profitability from that crop. So they have a bigger crop. If they get a good yield, that good yield will come to the world market, and it might do a lot to take the fire out of the market, but maybe not the heat. But that basically means that, you know, as I look forward at it, there is a lot to be said for thinking of trying to forward sell some rape currently. At the moment, I think it's a little thereabouts 500 euro a ton for next harvest. If you compare that with the fact that it was kind of traditionally around 390, 410. So it's an attractive price as a forward price.
And by all accounts, growers have responded to that. And indications are that we're seeing an increase in winter oilseed rape area this year.
Yes, our best guess, and it is only a guess rather than something that's very technical, but our best guess would be that the winter oilseed rape area has risen by somewhere around 25%. And it might be more than that, but that's kind of where the current best guess is, which would leave us maybe 13,000 hectares of winter oilseed rape. We would have another 1,000 hectares odd of spring rape on top of that. And if the price held into the spring, you could possibly see spring rape area pushing up to 1,500 or maybe even 2,000 hectares, which would give us a significant area of oilseed rape for a change. And of course, what that means is that the areas that go to either oilseed rape or beans, they won't be in cereals of any sort. And with the probability of increased winter plantings, weather permitting, into for another 3 weeks, if that happens, well, then we could see a significant decrease in spring crop plantings next year.
Okay. Siobhan, oilseed markets weren't the only market which caught our attention this week. There's been some movement on the fob creel malt and barley price index this week.
Yeah, so I got a bit of a fright this morning when I looked at it nearly. Well, it's good news, but the spot price, so barley that's available for sale now, was at €330 per tonne for that's the fob creel, and it's done on a July basis. Fob creel is a bit, it's a bit of a mystery market at times. It's hard to understand, but the spot price at the minute is at €330 per tonne. And I suppose that looks really good for malt and barley, but Bort Malt as of yet haven't put out a fixed price offer for their growers. They usually would in the autumn time. And that fixed price, of course, will be for harvest 2022. So we're not sure where that price is. So in mid-September, we think it was about €194 a tonne. But we don't have access to that price and don't know where that price is at the minute. So I think growers are getting a little bit frustrated. You know, they're planting now, there's winter malt going in, and those farmers have no option to fix any barley at present, or don't know where the price is. So
just remind our listeners, Ian and Siobhan, where did the malt and barley price end up for 2021?
So it was 237.67, I think, was the average. And then if you had distilling barley, there was a tenner added on top of that. And some farmers then would have fixed prices. There was a fixed price back in January. I think it was €200 a ton. So depending on what you fix, then it was added to that average as well. And growers were paid last week, but as of yet, they're sowing away. And have no idea of any sort of a fixed price. And I suppose, look, they're sowing other crops as well. As Andy said, you know, winter cereals are being planted, and maybe people are going to opt for more winter cereals instead of spring cereals. So, I mean, if the price doesn't come out soon, it could be a bit of a risk as well. You know, farmers did quite well out of winter cereals this week. The malt price wasn't maybe as strong as in comparison to other grains, because of the way the structure was, it just worked out maybe a little bit lower than normal this year. So I think the price needs to come out fairly soon in order to secure the area.
Yeah, certainly. And by all accounts, the current spot price would indicate that it needs to be a strong price as well.
Yeah, but look, and it'd be nice to have that price as well. Like the market is there. It'd be great if the farmers could just see that price every week. You know, it's there. It's just we need access to it, even if it came out on a text message every week or something.
Yeah, which by all accounts should be quite doable.
Just add to that, Stephen, before we leave it, that the grain movement, those bulk ships, the transport cost of those, it seems to have kind of escaped the market for quite a while. But I think this week, the week after, and I don't know how long into the future, the overall cost associated with moving a ton is gone up quite significantly. So that value technically should be added to any product that's available from the home market.
Okay, so in other words, it's making indigenous produce more competitive.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, guys, look, we're going to move on in the interest of time. Siobhan, once again, we're touching on fertilizer prices in this week's Irish Farmers Journal newspaper. Just give us a quick rundown on what you have in store for us.
Look, fertilizer, Andy kind of touched on some of this already. You know, markets are rising, and fertilizer is rising as well, and urea is now over €800 a ton. Compounds then you're looking at probably over €700 a ton for 18-6-12. So the market continues to move. I suppose contributing to this, natural gas price, it took a little bit of a dip last week, and but started to rise again on Tuesday. But in the past month, natural gas has increased by 57% in price. So that's one of the drivers. And then what Andy was talking about there, the high grain markets, those countries that are forward selling grain and they're buying their fertilizer at the same time, that's all contributing to it. And I suppose, look, it's going to be a high input year next year, a high cost on the inputs, and you know, farmers should be thinking about forward selling their grain and counteracting some of those high prices.
Yeah, I mean, just on the gas price, we have a piece in this week's paper from our colleague Anne Finnegan on the AgBiz page, just on gas price in general. There's been a lot of talk about this Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline coming on stream from Russia to Germany, and its implications on alleviating the gas crisis that we're currently experiencing. It certainly depends on who you talk to in the industry, but the feeling is that it's not going to do much in the short term. The pipeline is there, it's laid, it's ready to go. The final deal as such is being worked out. From what I understand, and hopefully gas molecules will start flowing soon. But realistically, you know, the prices that we're experiencing now, you know, gas is forward bought, so it is forward priced. They work in the forward market. So, you know, even if there was a suitable supply of gas on the market at the moment, we're not going to see that really influence things until next year at the earliest. So you're right, Siobhan. It is looking like a high cost year, which is all the more important for Bortmouth to come out and give growers a good forward price for the year. But we will wait and see. I suppose just whenever we're talking about winter sowing and spring sowing, just because of the indication of where input prices are going, surely we're going to look at a higher area of like some beans maybe next year, or spring beans, just purely because to try and cut down on input costs.
Yeah, definitely. Like there's already plenty of people talking, saying that they're going to plant beans next year and they won't have the nitrogen costs. I suppose what's important to note there as well, you know, if you plant beans, they're hungry for P and K as well. So, you know, just because you're cutting down on the nitrogen, you're going to have to watch your P and K indexes. But yeah, certainly looks like there's going to be a lot of people planting, which is good in so many ways, but is also kind of worrying because, you know, that budget of 3 million, the more area that goes into that 3 million, the smaller the payment gets. So you might know a bit more about that, Andy. Like, is there a scope for the department to add on to that budget, or is it up to EU level whether they can add on money or?
I'm not sure that they can add on money. The scheme itself wasn't controversial in year one, but it became very controversial in year two when the French objected to the scheme being used to increase area, which of course was the major reason that we did it, because we were starting at a very low or almost no base. So it is somewhat controversial in Europe, but if you stand back and look at it against all our requirements to try and decrease nitrogen, to decrease carbon footprint, etc., wouldn't it be a good thing if we moved on some of those things a year earlier than just having to wait for the new cap to look at a new protein scheme? Like we know that protein production scheme will continue into the future, and that's a good thing. We also know that the department are trying to get more money there to try and keep that area, indeed a bigger area, that they're going to increase the total from the 12,000 hectares upwards, so that people can get more acres into protein type crops or leguminous crops specifically. And with a bigger payment, it should help to make it more attractive, because the more acres we have that require zero artificial nitrogen, the lower our carbon footprint becomes. If this is a year when farmers are automatically thinking towards a crop that would require less nitrogen, perhaps this is the year to try and make that whole practice that little bit more appealing to them, if it were possible. And of course, I accept it may not be possible because it's an EU-controlled state aid that has to be negotiated. They may or may not accept it, but it would be a good time to be asking that question, to be trying to do something extra in the national interest.
Yeah, and like Andy, you talked about all the benefits of beans there and the low footprint, and like, you know, there's the fertilizers reduced, the pesticides on them is pretty low. Some farmers don't apply any fungicide at all, so they're a really good crop for soil as well. And when you look at the budget, like there was 21 million allocated to organics in the budget, it's up from 16 million last year. And you know, the only 60% of the places in the organic farming scheme were applied for this year. So I mean, you know, there's a few things to look at there on where some of that money maybe could be better used, or where it's going to be taken up more and can still have an extremely positive effect on the sector.
But I think, Siobhan, just to follow up on that, it would be quite negative if the tillage farmers went and pushed 15,000-16,000 acres of beans into the ground if the seed was there to do that, only to end up with maybe two-thirds or half the payment rate per acre or per hectare. That would be a negative in terms of the direction that we want the industry to move into the future. So it's certainly well worth pursuing.
Yeah.
Siobhan, while we're on budget 2022, I should say, look, we will have full coverage in this week's Irish Farmers Journal newspaper, but there were a few measures which are directly applicable to the tillage sector, particularly straw chopping.
Yeah, so straw chopping, look, and as you said, Stephen, this is going to be well covered in the paper this week, so we'll just touch on it. Like the straw scheme is to continue the strong cooperation measure. Just a few things to note, I suppose. The VAT rate has gone from 5.6 to 5.5, so that'll affect tillage farmers and their grain. And the second phase of the soil sampling scheme has been allocated €15 million. So there was €10 million for that scheme in last year's budget. So that's it says the first phase of the scheme saw 15,500 farmers apply. So they're gearing up for the second phase of that scheme already now in the budget with that 15 million. And look, you can read this week's paper for things on the carbon tax and the rest of it. There's really good detail.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, just on the renewables front, there has been, look, I would say it's positive moves on renewables front in this week's budget. Arguably it's more domestic than agriculture. Look, we're seeing, you know, €10 million of new money such going to a solar PV scheme for 2022 for domestic customers. I assume that'll apply to farmhouses as well. And new money being allocated towards retrofitting homes to try and increase that energy efficiency. But I suppose directly applicable to agriculture, we did get news this week that under TAMS, the available level of funding for solar PV systems, it can be increased from 40% to 60%, which is good, really good. However, I would still argue it's a little bit limited. I think under TAMS, the maximum size of the system, solar system, which you can install is around 11 kilowatt. To put that into perspective, that's about 500 square foot for a rooftop solar PV system. You know, look at the size of your typical tillage farms, sheds, look at the roof space that's available. It's not really adequate, so it's not. And considering that the micro generation scheme, you know, will allow installations of up to 50 kilowatt in size, you know, you'd have to question is TAM suitable for it. Look, I suppose one figure that keeps floating around in my head that came out there a couple of weeks ago is there's enough roof space in Ireland to accommodate for 3,000 megawatts worth of electricity. So not just a megawatt. So it's substantial. But yeah, I just don't think the funding is in place at the moment to make that a reality. But look, we have spoke about micro generation on this podcast quite a bit. Still waiting for a confirmed timeline from the commission's or the CRU. But look, as I said before, they're 3 or 4 months late now. So what's another few weeks in delaying the publication of the timeline?
Yeah, it's disappointing. Like, we hear so much about renewables and greener energy, and yet this is being held up so badly.
Yeah, and look, we all know that there's a real appetite out there at farm level to get in on the renewables game, and microgeneration, solar, it's a good start. We'll put it that there way. It's a good start. But look, we will move on again in the interest of time. Andy, we had a conversation last week about aphids and about the risk of BYDV on winter, autumn sown cereals this year. You have elaborated on that in this week's paper.
Yes, Stephen. You know, given the fact that we spend an amount of time on this podcast talking about the fact that we're having good weather, that's the positive. The negative is that it's also good for some other things, and in particular pests. And you know, given the fact that temperatures through September were above normal, and there are a couple of degrees above normal in a lot of the tillage areas of the country, even as we speak today and yesterday, that means that the multiplication rate of aphids is higher than it would normally be, and that probably means that the risk of barley yellow dwarf virus infection is higher than it might be of another year. Certainly this time last year, we ended up with virtually no problems because everything was so much cooler. This year is a different kettle of fish. And I think that given the risk that's there, with early sown crops, I think people will have no choice but to move and to get at least one insecticide on. I spoke to people yesterday, and they're putting on insecticide this week. I think it's fair to say that a lot of tillage farmers would prefer, if they didn't have to apply insecticide, it's an input that most people would prefer not to be using nowadays. But given the potential risk to the crop, there's little choice if we know the pressure is high. And I'm also covering the fact that, you know, research is trying to be a bit more precise and accurate in the advice that it's going to give farmers going forward as to whether or not there's a risk over and above the actual visible movement of aphids. If aphids are moving, are they carrying the virus with them? Because if they're not, they're no risk. If they are, they are a definite risk. And that's research is working in that area to try and give better advice into the future, but that information is not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, again, the same questions posed as last week, you know, from a grower's point of view, who's maybe sowing a little bit earlier than he should have. What is the, I suppose, what's the course of action? How do they decide whether or not they can get out there and apply insecticide or not? Is there a threshold? Are they on their hands and knees looking for aphids, or is it just purely an indication of aphid numbers based on temperature?
A lot of what people will have done in the past is an indication of numbers. We know that aphid numbers are relatively high in some crops that are susceptible to multiplication. Therefore, we know that aphids are about. Are the aphids of direct interest to BYDV about? That requires a bit more precise examination. But the general comment that I'm getting from people is that they are. Are they carrying virus? That's something we don't know. And we research is asking the question, but it's not yet in a position to advise us currently about what to do going forward. So I think most people will take a view that they will be protecting their early sown crops with at least one aphicide this week or next week. And then they may move again later in the month or early next month, depending on what happens, the conditions between here and there.
Okay. So moving on, Siobhan, look, I think we can all agree that tillage farmers are industrious and are not afraid to try new things and new crops. And around about this time of year, we're seeing a lot of the one particular crop around the place to coincide with Halloween, and that is pumpkins. So Siobhan, this week you visited a pair of pumpkin growers, twin brothers, I believe.
Yeah, Oisin and Micheál, and it was a really, really nice farm visit. So Oisin and Micheál aren't farmers now. They have horticulture and farming in their backgrounds, but not from a farm, and have rented 4 acres and grow pumpkins. And just a really good story. They've been growing them since 2018, and I suppose they were taking a bit of a hit. They were selling pumpkins, you know, to other patches, and they were selling them on, they weren't selling them themselves. So this year they have their own pumpkin patch and are hoping to get a better margin out of it. And I suppose got when you see the patch, there's 4 acres and 15,000 pumpkins on it. And there's a lot of work planting those pumpkins and looking after them and watering them during the year. And I suppose, interestingly, both of the twins are doing PhDs. So they're 28 and Oisin is studying, he's in biomedical engineering, and Oisin is crop science. So he's actually been growing cultures in the lab like Trichoderma and Lactobacillus, and spraying these on crops to see will they fight disease. So he's been using some of those products on the pumpkins to keep away some of the powdery mildew and the rots. And by all accounts, seems to be quite happy with the pumpkins during the year, said he had very healthy crops, and he's applying other things like seaweed and that kind of thing. And they lay plastic to suppress the weeds, so they're not using chemicals on the patch.
Wow, sounds like a fantastic reading. And where can we find that in this week's paper?
That's on the sustainability pages. Yeah, just a nice read, and great to see, you know, someone who didn't come from our brothers who didn't come from a farm, and they've started up with their 4 acres and not a bother on them. It's a really good story.
Good stuff. Good stories. That's what we're always interested in hearing in this sector. So I suppose to finish up, Andy, what is in store for the week ahead? Is this settle spell going to continue, or are we going to see a breakdown anytime soon?
The only way I can answer that, Stephen, is not according to the current forecast. We've had a lot of rain in the forecast for the last few weeks, and a lot of tillage areas didn't see it at all. So maybe that look will continue for many people who have work to do. But the forecast, as it's given to us this week, would see a significant break probably coming on Saturday. Significant because it's happening across the country, but rainfall volume's not that big, from 2 to 10 mil, depending on where you are in the country. Sunday, a reasonable day everywhere, but Monday then is to be the wet day. There's a fair bit of rain in the forecast, from 11 to 20 mils, just depending on where you are. South probably getting the worst end of it, around by the west and up into the northwest as well. Next 2 days, rain again, but not that much rain. On Tuesday, the Tuesday's rain is mainly in the southeast and the west. Other areas kind of 2 to 6 mil, that might not stop you if you were going in straight behind a plough. A bit of rain on Wednesday as well, but not bad. I think the difference is that we're looking next week, as things go by, at nighttime temperatures falling fairly significantly down to about 4 degrees Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, but relatively high daytime temperatures associated with it. So that's kind of somewhat unusual, that we're seeing that day-night gap increasing at this time of the year. All in all, we could still see some work being done over the next week.
Good to hear, Andy. Good to hear. Okay, so guys, time has once again beaten us here. So from Andy, Siobhan and myself, Stephen Robb, thank you all very much for listening. And until next time, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.